สสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะบุญทางดัมมังสังฆังนมัสสามิ
This morning at the morning reflection that I gave, I mentioned that I was reading Hung Shur's and Hung Chao's book about their bowing pilgrimage. And one of the things they wrote was that they had noticed a car passed them with a bumper sticker. I'm lost, but I'm really moving. Which is so that that's a actually a very good description of the human condition. And good to reflect and consider just how much of a habit we have of trying to keep moving, even though we don't really know where we're going or what we're doing or what purpose it's going to serve, and to actually step back and consider, well, how lost am I? And so much of the world is engaged in movement, busyness, doing things, activity, engaging in things, and it's all justified, has some particular value placed on it. But is it, what purpose is it really serving? And does it actually bring about any kind of happiness or completion? That was Ajahn Chah's great motivation for leaving the world and ordaining and sticking it out as a monk in his practice, was that sense of, I was looking for something with completion. And also just to pay attention to the ways that we keep moving without recognizing that we're actually lost. And that doesn't have to play itself out in some grand scenario of a worldly condition, but that sense of, in very ordinary things in day-to-day life, what kind of conversations do we engage in? Are we just saying things because we don't, it fills up the space of fulfilling some sort of activity. You know, what kind of actions do we engage in? Do we just keep ourselves busy? You know, whatever, what do we do with our minds? You know, we just sort of trapped in the moving mind and not really reflecting clearly on it. So you know, it's really important to be able to turn attention to the way that we're caught up in movement, activity, engagement, on all levels, and really begin to see the value and the strength in learning how to stop. And we've just spent 45 minutes in meditation. And how much time of that was spent in stopping? Or was it just one thought to one impression to one proliferation to one memory to just this movement, constant movement? How much are we able to really stop? And not stop because you fell asleep, but stopping because there's a clarity and awareness and a stillness that rises up out of contentment and mindfulness. So to be able to reflect on that and to recognize the value in that stopping, and that's not something that you can just conjure up. I mean, it's good to hold as a perspective and a reflection, recollection in the mind of, well, yes, stopping. But we also need to pay attention to the conditions that allow us to stop, and cultivation of mindfulness and attention, just taking the breath as the object, and really taking an interest in the breath, taking the breath, the physical sensation of the breath, the posture, how the breath affects the body, how the breath affects the posture, and just allow the one's interest to really engage, to motivate the mind in a way that turns its attention to something that simple, just the in-breath and the out-breath. Rather than trying to analyze it, or trying to analyze oneself, or trying to force the mind to just shut up and be quiet. But it's the ability to take an interest and sustain interest in that, in a very simple activity, that allows the mind to focus and settle. You know, we'll never really gain clarity until the mind is able to settle. You can't think your way to a solution of suffering or dissatisfaction. You can't think your way to a solution of birth and death. You can't think your way to a solution of sort of the nature of being as a conundrum of the human condition. But it's when we're able to be very still and very clear that you'll be able to have an insight or a perspective opens up that allows one to gain a confidence in a particular way of training or viewing things, and that's what the Buddha's teachings are skillful means for giving us perspectives. But first we have to learn how to still the mind and to allow the mind to be comfortable with stopping, so that that bringing attention to the breath, that sustaining and nurturing of attention, relaxing the body, bringing a tranquility to the body and the mind. And just really on each in-breath and each out-breath, it's it seems very simple and basic, and it is, but it's something that we find extremely difficult to do, because that satisfaction of the allure of satisfaction that one's actually getting somewhere because one's moving. When in reality, I'm lost, but man, I'm really moving. Isn't that great? So the just that questioning, where is this movement taking me? Where is this movement actually? Am I in control of it? Is one just being helplessly dragged along behind the movement of the mind, the movement of the moves? Sort of like one time I was over visiting Ajahn Liam at Wat Nongpapong, and it was late at night, and we're just sitting around talking and chatting, and all of a sudden I hear this sort of clunk clunk, woo 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 woo, clunk clunk, woo 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 woo, and this sound, and then this dog sort of howling and running along, and I looked at Ajahn Lee and I said, what's that all about? And he sort of smiled and he said, there's a lot of rabbits at Wat Papong, but they live in the monk section, particularly around Ajahn Liam's area. And the nuns have dogs, and the dogs sneak into the monks' part of the monastery sometime and try to catch the rabbits. So Ajahn Liam sort of sets these sort of little traps with tin cans, and they get caught in these traps, and of course the tin can falls down, makes a noise, the dog gets scared, and then sort of runs off. Of course the tin can starts making more noise, and the dog keeps howling, and there we go with another image of the human condition. we're sort of chased along by our own thoughts, our own moods, our own sort of clatter that we make, and then are driven along by it, and it's impossible to find peace and clarity in that way. So that the effort that we make towards attending to the stopping within the mind, and just that paying attention to just one breath at a time, just paying to one in breath, one out breath, paying attention to the sensations in the body, paying attention to relaxing and letting stuff go, just not letting the moods arise in consciousness and awareness, and not trying to squash them, but not following them, not being chased along by them, not just reacting to the moods, impressions that we have, the thoughts and feelings that arise, just not being chased along by them, like one of the Wat Pho Phong dogs, when they just recognizing and then attending to stopping, settling, putting things down. That's the whole key, or the whole, if one or two describe the path in a very succinct way. It's just that knowing and letting go, just knowing and letting go, knowing the moods of the mind and letting them go, knowing the thoughts within the mind and letting them go, knowing the impingement and contact that we have, whether it's external or internal, knowing it and letting it go, rather than that just that having things coming into the field of the senses, experiencing it in a bit of a cloud, and then reacting in various ways to it, whether it's through our likes and dislikes, or our approval or disapproval, and just not getting caught up in that cycle. So that the bringing attention to that quality of stopping and coming back to a place of awareness. The stopping is not a place of dullness. It's not a place of shutting down. It's a place of awareness and clarity, and allowing that. And that's how we can truly be not lost, is by being aware, being alert, being attentive, being circumspect in recognizing what is the internal contact, what's the external contact, what are my reactions, what's the impulse, what do I need to let go of. And from that point, one can just have the discernment to say, well, what's useful for cultivation, what's skillful for putting effort and energy into. Because so much of the effort and energy of our life is just sort of spent in flailing around. It's like somebody who is drowning, sinking in the water, and that where they're just sort of flailing, and then they sink. And I had that happen to me one time as a lay person, where our boat tipped over. A friend of mine, was and for me it was, I'm just so used to the water that I can float and swim, and I'm just hours and hours. It's not a, it's quite delighting. But that the this particular friend of mine was panicked, and of course flailing, and in starting to sink. So just having to really try to calm them and get to a place where they're feeling a sense of refuge. But that, you know, but in reality, all it takes is just sort of just stopping and resting, and then you actually float on your own. But you know, once you start flailing, then you start sinking. And again, that's, you know, where much of the energy in our human existence goes to the flailing. It doesn't go to the returning to stillness and then settling and seeing, okay, now what? Now what to do? Now what's useful? Now what's beneficial? Now what's going to actually be useful? So that sense of learning how to stop is just so much a necessary tool in order to then implement the kind of the path of a practice for in the Buddha's teachings. So that it's really putting a lot of attention on learning how to stop, learning how to step back, and watching the reactions that we have, and recognizing, well, can I just stop? You know, there's a mood of irritation comes up in the mind, and then, you know, then see, the thing is that you just start getting the associations and justifications start piling on, and then it just sweeps one along. But to actually be attentive enough to the, as moods arise in the mind, to say, can I stop? How do I bring a quality of stopping to this? And a lot of it is just that awareness and letting go. And it letting, being able to bring attention back to those, the very simple foundations of one in-breath and one out-breath. 'Cause as soon as it starts snowballing in terms of the associations and justifications and the story behind it all, then one swept along. And just bringing it back to a simple sensation, a simple feeling, sort of irritation, anger, aversion. See, we only experience one, the nature of the mind is such that we only experience one mental state at a time. You know, it may feel like there's a whole flood of things happening all at once, but the reality is there's a one mental state at a time, and as one pays attention and draws attention back to the simplicity of, okay, the breath, awareness, and attention, and then it starts. You start to see how the mind makes those associations, justifications, proliferations that swamp the mind. So then coming back to that simplicity, one breath at a time, one mental moment at a time, and then, okay, how is there a place of stopping within this? The settling. You know, desire is the same. It's sort of the, you know, the nature of the nature of desire. We see something attractive, we build a case very quickly for its its desirability, how much we really need it, how much it's going to satisfy, how much it's going to gratify. Again, we flood our mind with all of the attractive elements. Yeah? I mean, that's the way desire works. It's able to block out the fact that we've actually had that before. We've done it before. We've seen it all, but one overrides that with all of the attractive things. It just blots it out. Forget, we don't get swept up in that movement of the stream of desire. So that stopping is just so important to being able to not be just sucked into compelling nature of desire. So this quality of stopping is so essential for being able to cut through the habit of the mind, the conditioning of the mind. And, you know, and it's not some complicated rocket science. I mean, it's one breath at a time. Bring attention back. You lose it, you forget, you're unmindful. Start over, one breath at a time. One in breath, one out breath. Just this moment right now. And keep connecting the dots. Keep connecting, trying to get momentum of that awareness. And of course as we gain a quality of stability and clarity, it's also important, essential to be able to then train the mind with the perspectives of right view. What the Buddha called samadhitti, the right view, right understanding. And right view is always cast in the understanding of the Four Noble Truths. The truth of dukkha or suffering, discontent, dissatisfaction. Its cause, its cessation, path leading to the cessation of dukkha. And you know, recognizing that it's because when we don't see things in the light of just seeing as long as things aren't seen with wisdom and discernment, then we're always, getting trapped. You know, we're always lost, but really moving. So that seeing, being able to view things through that lens of, is there an element of dukkha there, of discontent, dis-ease, dissatisfaction, a sense of stress, a sense of even to the slightest degree of suffering. And you see that in just it doesn't have to mean, it's where the Buddha points to these different elements of dukkha, I mean, one, the element of dukkha being that which is painful or uncomfortable or associated with dis-ease, you know, the suffering of the body, suffering of the mind, separation. That's one element. But then the sort of the emotional distress that we feel. But then there's, you know, where the Buddha points to even that which is pleasant and loved and cherished. You know, there's also an element of dukkha there. And because the reality of the truth of the nature of things is that there's always has to be separation. And if we don't see that clearly, if we don't understand that, then we invest in that which is loved and delighted in and pleasurable in a way that leads to disappointment later. You know, it doesn't mean we don't enjoy things, we don't find things pleasurable, but there's a clear recognition that when one relates to things without wisdom, without discernment, then even the pleasant, which we're experiencing, that there's going to be separation, and that will result in suffering. And recognizing that, understanding that. You know, that way there's no surprises, there's no shocks. The world is like this. It's not shocking. One isn't fearful of that, fearful of change, fearful of things, the separation, because it's natural, this is the way nature is. The other source of dukkha that the Buddha points to is sankhara dukkha. Then the separation is viparinama dukkha. The dukkha of sankhara dukkha is that all things are conditioned, and that because things are conditioned, then there's always there's never a simple cause and effect, linear cause and effect relationship. Like, this is absolutely the way it is all the time. Everything is propped up by many different conditions, and some of them are for progression, and some of them are for regression. Some of them, and just the very fact that everything has to be propped up by conditions, then there's an inherent tension going on. It's just like having a body. Then there's an inherent tension in trying to keep the body comfortable. Even if you're healthy and strong and young and vigorous, there's still an inherent tension there. Because that's the nature of a body. They're built up by sankharas, they're conditioned things, they're conditioned phenomena. Or even the mind. Even when you can allow the mind to stop and rest in peace and clarity, and one has to learn that skill, one has to be experienced in it, but there's also sankhara dukkha. I mean, the fact that it's conditioned, external conditions, internal conditions, are holding that together. And there's an inherent tension within that. And then the dissolution, change that takes place. And it's not to say that, well, because it's like that, then one is disappointed and frustrated. It's just the way things are. And it's by understanding conditions, seeing through conditions, seeing through the nature of things, that allows one to rest in that, just that quality of knowing and letting go. Knowing and letting go. So that whole process, that very simple practice, knowing and letting go, that's the basis of the whole path, really, right from the beginning stages of virtue and skillful conduct with mindfulness and concentration with wisdom and discernment. It's a refinement, a progression. It also supports the whole path. Direct attention to that quality of stopping, allowing things to stop, and not be drawn into that restless movement, the compulsive movement that is just so much a part of the human condition. Recognizing that there really is a way out of this. To offer that for reflection this evening.